I'm glad you guys chose to come to this one, the Music 2.0, Engaging Fans with Mobile Social Apps. So we have some really great panelists here today. I'm the moderator, Brenna Ehrlich. I'm the senior writer and editor for the O Music Awards, which is MTV's new digital music award show dedicated to honoring the intersection between music and technology. So I'll have our panelists introduce themselves now.
Sure. So I'm Glenn Miller from Creative Artists Agency. I oversee our digital strategy and marketing group. And from an agency perspective, what that basically means is we become an extension of our talent's management company to be able to roll out their official properties, do tech investments, and we're also a digital ad agency as well.
I'm Michael Schneider. I'm CEO of Mobile Roadie. And Mobile Roadie is a platform that lets non-technical people make a mobile app in about an hour. Some of the apps in the music space that we power include Adele, Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, Linkin Park, Bon Jovi, The Beatles, a whole bunch of great names. In total, over 3,000 apps and over 17 million downloads on our platform.
I'm Matt Thomas, and I run business development for GetGlue, specifically in the music vertical. GetGlue is a social network, the leading network for entertainment check-ins, so similar to Foursquare, as I'm sure everyone's heard of. Our check-ins are directly to TV shows, movies, music, and fans engage and get recommendations and rewards for broadcasting the stuff that they're into.
Hello, Steve Chaney. I run business development at GroupMe. GroupMe is a group messaging platform that allows you to basically create a private group and throw a bunch of friends in it and have real-time conversations, kind of reply to all sort of for your SMS inbox. We have apps that run on every platform, you know, the most popular being iPhone and Android. I run the brand partnership side, which is really interesting as we start to look at how messaging in general can be used across sports, live events. We'll talk a lot about like music and how we do some of the things in that world, and kind of layering the service on top of the user-to-user engagement mode, and then also the things that brands can start to target to users when you have that like access to their phone.
Great. So we'll just jump right in. What's interesting to me is how mobile applications and, you know, the advent of the smartphone has changed the way we go to shows, and how the iconic image of holding up your lighter has been replaced with this, taking pictures, documenting, checking in with location software. So I just wanted to ask you guys, what's the most compelling way you've seen mobile technology change the way people go to live shows or take in live concerts?
I think on the live space, I think it kind of kicks in at a few different areas. I think we've seen it especially be really effective leading up to the live show. So trying to get that community involved, from whether it's checking in early to get early access for when they show up in lineup, to while you're there figuring out how do we get people to open up the app, to again check in, but then also to allow it to tweet to screen and do a lot of group activities, and then after the show being able to deliver content back. So I think it becomes a full service activity instead of just taking a picture now.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the Jay-Z concert last night. Everybody was hardly looking at Jay-Z. They were looking at their screen, and I was part of that for a while, and I felt that I agree. I think it's hard. In our apps, we see a lot of people RSVPing and telling their friends about a show beforehand. I think it's hard, given the dynamics of a show, to actually sell to a fan or do something in the heat of the moment. But I think before, leading up to the show, and after the fact, there's actually a ton that can be done to engage them, to have them promote the show to social channels, and to sell to them.
And I think social social networking in general and mobile has sort of built this convergence where everyone's all your friends are at your fingertips. And I think that when you're in those moments, like a live show or listening to music or watching a movie, you want to be able to broadcast what you're watching at those points in time where you're blown away, or something that you really want to share, or a picture or whatever. So I think that that ability from the smartphone standpoint, I think everybody wants to be able to share that, those moments with their friends. And I think it's built a business now. Companies like us have been able to be a part of, where we can sort of harness and focus those conversations, similar to what Glenn was saying, so that you're getting a boost in fan-to-fan marketing at the points in time where it helps the artist the most, whether it's around the on sales or after an album is out and you want to socialize your favorite songs or whatever. And we can kind of harness those conversations and spin it to help whatever the partner is looking to accomplish.
One of the coolest things we've seen is actually it did work in the show where one of our artists, Linkin Park, started taking the top users of their app and actually upgrading their seats at the show in real time. That was a direct benefit to have the mobile app. And obviously, if you're sitting in the back and now you're sitting in the first row, courtesy of the artist, that's a huge benefit to the fan too. So there's definitely exceptions on making it interesting during the show as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the GroupMe side, if we look at sort of just people, like what we're doing here, right? Like everyone's really inherently social. I think music is a unique sort of cross-section of that, and then it's an emotional thing. Like people love sharing what they're really interested in around, you know, things like preferences for music, and sharing that experience like in real time at a show is awesome. And if you can do that before and sort of have that group construct, so in our world it's all about, you know, your five friends you're going to go to the show with, right? So when we partner with people like Lollapalooza and get in, like, either inside their app directly so you can create a group or somehow market to those people to get groups started before the show, we've seen crazy data around just the engagement that happens, like, months prior, right? And I think a lot of those conversations stay persistent afterward, and we measure that data. In some cases, people are going to Lollapalooza and they're already thinking about going to the show a year later. And so I feel that if you can kind of tap into that, and we'll talk about some of the things that GroupMe does. I won't ramble about that because it's probably not completely relevant. But I think the feedback loop between sort of the music side, the artist side, to the fans is getting extremely tight.
And I think one of the things you notice with everything we're saying is, you know, you've got to keep it personal. It's like whether it's the check-ins and getting upgrades or the tweet to screens or whatever you're doing, because you know, it's not about that text message out to a screen or out to nowhere that you have no idea who just sent it. It's about saying, this is me, and having other people know that you're there. And I think as long as you're keeping all the fans involved and giving them an identity, you're already one step ahead of a lot of other people that are out there doing it.
And it's great from a marketing standpoint, too, because you're more willing to check out something that your friends send. So from a marketing standpoint, you're able to kind of broadcast out to your friends and that feedback loop that he was talking about. And you're seeing, I mean, now that people have so many friends and followers, I mean, you're seeing ridiculous amounts of fan out conversations. I think every day our only 2 million users are hitting 170 million people a day. And that's pretty sizable amount of activity per person. So, I mean, when you find something that they love, I mean, everybody's going to want to know what that person's talking about.
Yeah, I wanted to talk. We were talking. You guys mentioned people talking up until an event, after an event, during an event, and it seems like the experience of going to a live show with the advent of mobile technologies has just expanded so much. And what opportunities do you guys see in that expansion for artists and for brands, for audience members? Like, what can we get out of the fact that a live show experience is not the 2 hours that you're watching Jay-Z, but, you know, kind of like a day-to-day situation?
I think we're already getting it to a large degree. I mean, the artist's brand clout or noise is increased automatically as people are tweeting and Facebooking and doing all that sort of stuff. One of the technologies I find really interesting right now is a company called Sonic Notify that has this invisible, inaudible sound that is broadcasted that we're about to do something with, where the app will just start to change automatically because you happen to be at the show. And I think experiences like that, where fans don't even have to check in, but they're getting a benefit for doing something at the show, especially on the artist's behalf, is the future.
You can see it at the Tweet House. Check it out there. But no, that is very true. I mean, companies like that are enabling check-ins or actions that's removing you one step from the process so that it's automatic, I think is definitely a big thing that people are moving towards. Because if you notice, yes, as check-ins are going up or certain actions are going up, there's also a lot of people that are dropping off of that because the action to do it is pretty tedious. So I think, you know, making it more simpler and making it automatic is definitely something where a lot of these things are going.
And another obvious thing is just the proliferation of smartphones. Can you raise your hand in the room if you have a smartphone, any smartphone? Raise your hand if you don't. Okay, well, and I know we're biased, but I think Android is getting pretty close to zero. So as the phone can do more and more and their little computers in your pocket, it opens up an entire world. It's an obvious trend, but it's just an important one to note.
And I was also wondering, obviously, like the mobile roadie apps have a lot of people commenting and talking. Are these, do you know metrics if these are super fans or if it's just, you know, average users who are like, I like Katy Perry, I'm going to interact with this app? Like, how much is the audience interacting with this?
So I think if you're an average user, you might not even take the time to download an app. You're sort of segmenting yourself into the more super fan category just by taking a minute to download. It's a free app, but you still need to make a little bit of an effort to get it on your phone. But yeah, I mean, the level of activity we see is really off the charts compared to the, I would say, the average fan that is just tweeting or posting on Facebook every now and then.
And also, I just wanted to talk about artists' engagements with these platforms and these applications. Glenn, obviously, you work with a lot of artists. How easy is it to get artists to adopt this kind of technology?
Well, I think every artist is a little different. I think you have, you know, a lot of legacy artists who are used to a certain business model when it comes to these type of things and getting paid and wondering where the brand relationship is. I think you have a lot of up-and-coming artists and kind of people in that middle tier that understand, you know, this is where they started. They started out on whether it was MySpace back in the day or Facebook or whatever they're doing now in their local town. And they know that this is their bread and butter. And they know that, you know, without this engagement, we say this about all the time with even our people outside of music, whether you're sports or you're an actor, is that those people that are starting now that are engaged with those fans are the ones that are going to have longevity over the people that just come in and have big box office scores. And I think that's something that, you know, education's a big part of what everybody always needs to be doing. But I think, you know, we're getting a new group of talent that's really wanting to be involved because they know they have to be, because that's just now part of being a celebrity.
I think people are getting smarter too and seeing how social media is affecting the core business of how you make money. I mean, we do a lot in television specifically, and there's been tons of case studies where they've shown that there's an actual lift in ratings because of social activity. And these are the fan, you know, to friend conversations, and that's a powerful thing. And I think as we get more into this and understand how to attribute it within music, I think you're going to see a lot more people adopt it because they know exactly how they're going to be making money through it, similar to how they're tracking it.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's trying to sort of hack, like, how to make yourself go viral, right? Like, make your video go viral, your song, so on and so forth. So there's this sharing back to other networks, you know, through Facebook and through Twitter, obviously, that is starting to become just really intriguing for use cases. We actually did something with Bon Jovi where, because GroupMe is sort of you and your private friends, like, it, you know, you can't share to other networks as easily, right? It's you and your sort of small group. So how could we actually extend that to the Facebook platform? So we had Bon Jovi drop into a group that was created under his branded page, and it ended up being 10, I think it was like housewives in the Midwest that were in love with Bon Jovi. And we're like, how can we actually share this out? How can, like, you know, we take, like, basically this promotional incentive to create a group that was really, really cool, and that these 10 fans, like, went crazy. So what they decided to do, and I thought was really innovative, was take a video of John backstage in Ohio chatting with his phone to this group of 10 people, and then they posted that to Facebook. And I feel like those sort of modes of sharing to all these networks now through the mobile roadie apps, Instagram obviously, is just allows that touch point to become, like, really, really tight, and the artists can feel and see the connection with their fans. And so they, I think, to the point that Glenn was making, you know, it's important for them to do that. It's free marketing, effectively, and it's they want to be in touch with their fans as opposed to be in the ivory tower.
I think that the barrier, I mean, the we were talking about earlier, the artist fan layers is really disappearing. And one example from our arsenal was Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park has an iPhone, likes his app, loves his fans, and would go in whenever he was bored and comment on random fans' comments. And the way that works that's really cool is when you comment on a comment, that user gets a push, and it's the person who signed in. So it literally said, Mike Shinoda just commented on your comment. And, you know, if you're a super fan of Linkin Park, I can't imagine a more thrilling experience. But it doesn't take that much effort anymore to interact, to have a really positive impact with your fans. You don't have to do a press conference or a meet and greet is great, but there's very low-touch things you can do that have very high impact.
Well, I think in that note, too, with a lot of these, whether it's mobile or just digital in general, there is, you know, as you're bridging, closing that gap between fans and talent, there's also the ability that the talent doesn't even have to be involved anymore, where if you've got the right team, you know, you can have a level of, you know, of work that's done by us. Yeah. But I mean, there's plenty of people that we are online that are, you know, that are huge in the digital space. And, you know, as long as you're that core part of the team and have the same voice, it's still, I mean, we've got people with 50 million Facebook fans and 15 million people on Twitter, and, you know, people would never know it's not that artist because that artist does chime in, but you know, you have to do it to a level that they're comfortable with.
Which artists are you?
Oh, there's a lot of them.
How does that work? Do you have like a training course, like how to tweet like Jay-Z?
No, I mean, I think it just comes from, you know, when you're really a part of that artist core team, you really build a relationship with the talent. And you're no longer just sitting there going, this is a marketing tool. You're sitting there going, all right, I'm a 17-year-old girl now. I'm a 40-year-old rapper later. And then now I'm like a little boy that just started drinking. So now I'm going to start talking about partying. But like, it's just really getting to know your client and figuring that out. And I think more and more so, you know, there are talent that will pick one outlet that they're comfortable with doing. And then they really grow on that one. So whether, you know, right now, obviously more people seem to be really comfortable with signing up for Twitter on the talent side because it's so easy on the app and just shooting out a quick message, where they'll get terrified about posting something on Facebook. And so it's now, all right, let's have them own their space and do the best that they can instead of trying to kill them across everything and overwhelm them. And so it just goes back to the overall strategy.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm interested, obviously, like we can't, all bands can't have, you know, a professional tweeting for them and doing their social and their PR. How can bands who are smaller, I know there's a tendency to be like, oh, I need an application. Check out my new application, random band that no one's ever heard of. What's the best strategy? Because obviously, you know, releasing an app when no one knows you seems kind of counterintuitive. What would you guys suggest for a band who's looking to use mobile technology to reach new fans?
Well, I think definitely, with mobile new bands too, I think there's a lot of things that you do in your everyday life that need to be mobile optimized. So if you're getting your site built, you know, everybody's saying now that for artists that obviously mobile web is going to kill the artist app. And so, you know, you sit there and you look, I mean, I could sit there and look at a client's website right now and know that, you know, more than 25% of the daily traffic's coming from a Droid phone. Which, you know, a year ago, you didn't even see that at all. You'd see a little bit of iPhone and whatnot, but or iOS, but now you're seeing a lot of the traffic going is going to be from mobile. So making sure that everything you're doing is mobile optimized and then tying into other mobile apps that are out there so that you can get your brand out there on top of other people's audience. Because I think a lot of people forget that, yes, you need to listen to your core audience, but there's millions of other people out there that have no idea who you are or are not taking the action to say that they like you or want to download your app or be a part of you. And I think you have to be very aware of that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's also about mobilizing your existing fans and turn them into somewhat of an online street team to reach their friends. And I think that's a huge core of at least what we're trying to do at GetGlue is taking, you know, let's say 30 to 40,000 fans who each have 800 friends on Facebook and Twitter and turning them into a broadcast channel to reach their friends, because that's a huge reach with your existing base. And I think, you know, bands need to come up with fun ways to reward their existing fans for having those conversations. I think it's, you know, everybody's at, you know, your closest friends, if you're in a band, are passing out flyers on your behalf, and there's nothing different except they're doing it online to reach people. So I think the advent of smartphones and the connection that everyone has gives you unlimited ways to reach a big group of people.
Well, and it's like action and reward with your platform. I mean, like whether we were sitting there with like Demi or Gorillaz or something, it was check in, you get your sticker, And then who knows, you might also get a backstage pass or a ticket to a show in your market or whatever it is. And I think, you know, those simple free rewards that don't cost anybody anything go a lot farther than any of us that, you know, get tickets or get whatever on a normal basis will ever see.
What's also, too, in the conversations is now artists can reward the actual conversation, not the check-in. I kind of have somewhat of a difference of opinion with the validation that you guys were talking about earlier. I think that when you make something too easy where someone can just share something without having a personal connection to that broadcast, I think you're sort of limiting the reach. And I think a lot of artists want to sort of focus the conversation that their fans are having. And that's what we're finding in a lot of ways. Like, we just did something with Beyonce where her new single was Love on Top. So instead of just saying, hey, check in and to the single that you're listening to it, let's have fans actually mention who they love and whose love they put on top. So it's something that it's fun and it's rewarding. And when you look back and you monitor all the conversations that happened, it was a pretty staggering reach, and fans loved it. And it was personal. It was something that they were rewarded for, something that really was fun for them and engaging. And that's, I think, the best kind of way to motivate your fans to spread buzz on your behalf.
I just wanted to say, for the record, I don't think every artist should have an app. I think that if you don't have compelling content, and if you're not willing to invest time into making it compelling and great for fans, there's no point. However, no name band that may have 100 fans that really love the no name band, those 100 people should be coveted and rewarded, and those are the people that are going to pass out the flyers and pass out the flyers virtually on Facebook and Twitter. And I think that there's a lot of merit if you're willing to put in the time and you're willing to dedicate the content to the app to having that experience. We get asked every day, what is the difference between a mobile app and a mobile website, and aren't mobile websites just going to overwhelm apps, or apps aren't going to be needed anymore? And the answer is yes and no. The sense that you should mobile optimize everything is absolutely true. And today there's no reason to have a website that's not mobile friendly. But I think the different feel of an app, where it feels like a community, where you could send push notifications to people that you cannot do on a mobile website, where you are accessing different media, for example, the camera, that you can't do on a mobile website. There's simply limitations that sound maybe trite or small, but that actually make a big difference in either the user experience or the ability for, in this case, the artist to actually reach fans where they are and reward them and do all that cool stuff.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that a lot of the discussions here are hitting on, right, is you have this, you have this fan that's a diehard fan that's downloaded the app. They're sort of what we think of as like the connected user. They're like connected to the experience, right? They're on Facebook. They have your app. They're all over the content. And a lot of that is rewarding that person and making it really easily to bring other friends and become effectively like the brand evangelist and bring other people into those conversations, as opposed to pushing down from the brand messaging, kind of pushing into people's face. I think if friends tell their friends about stuff, that's like an organic way to sort of grassroots way to get music from one person to the next.
That's one of the reasons why are similar to the badges that you have with Foursquare. We actually call them stickers, and every single person that checks in to an artist or a show or a movie actually gets something for free in the mail. So it's not just a digital reward, but you get something tangible. And I think the more ways bands can reward with tangible free goods is going to help those conversations along.
Well, how easy is it? I think I was talking to you about how hard it is to sell things through applications, to sell tickets, to sell physical merch. How easy is it to take, the digital experience and bring it into the real world that way, to translate that digital engagement to some kind of, payoff for the artist or for the brand who's hosting this?
I mean, I think it's pretty easy. I mean, the example, we worked with Michael on this too, on Katy Perry as part of the overall thing for her tour. I mean, we went from launching Facebook check-ins in Europe, where you're at the venue checking in, to doing that through her Mobile Roadie app here in the States. So you had people, getting the chance to meet her or the opportunity to cut the entire line of 20,000 people. Then you could also tweet every night with a dedicated hashtag that would show up on the screen. So now you not only had people going into the app to tweet because they knew they could get up there and they didn't have to worry about the hashtag, then you had people in the venue getting excited because you were able to see them up on the screen with their photo and their name. But then you had people in the real world who couldn't even get into the show watching every night. And granted, Katie's unique in her own right, but it was a trending topic every night with that hashtag. So now you had people out there wondering what's going on every night in these cities, because it's always happening. It's like Wembley Dreams, London Dreams, LA Dreams, and you watch it and you watch all the photos and all the commentary happening, and you know, people go, wow, I wish I was a part of that, or has it come to my area because now I want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's finding that balance, and it's just, you know, what are you doing on a daily basis and how can you incorporate that into everything? Because you don't want to reinvent the wheel, but you do need to have an impact when you're doing stuff.
I do think it is hard, though, currently to buy physical goods on mobile and in mobile apps. Amazon's doing it fairly well. eBay's doing it fairly well. In general, it's not that easy. And we're working on that problem. There's others working on that problem, but I think it needs to change. The only thing that's really easy right now to buy is an iTunes track, and that's great, but it's $1.29. It's not a $19.99 t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a couple quick examples the things that we've done, and primarily we're focused on buzz. It's, as I've been saying, it's digital grassroots buzz from fans to friends, but we can sort of harness that and point fans in a direction while they're thinking about the artist or while they're watching the show to try to get them to transact. And we had some recent success. One big campaign was something we did with the Oscars, which Warner Brothers had the track that was the official Oscars theme. So what we did is try to take all the fans that were checking into the Oscars, and we had 170,000 check-ins for the broadcast. And what we try to do is point them also in the direction of the artists as a development tool to help expose these fans to the theme song that they may not know that what that song was. So of the 170,000 check-ins, we gave them a free download of the track, and the conversion rate was 75%. So basically 125,000 people clicked through to get the download. Now, how did that help them financially on the sales side? They jumped up 10 spots on iTunes that night, partially to what we were doing as well as some of the other things they were doing for the single. But that from a buzz to sale example is a pretty good model, and I guess 75% conversion for the download digitally, I think, proves that when you have people's attention, when they're focused on something like a show or a song, and if you can get them to transact immediately, you're going to have a pretty good conversion rate. We did something. Oh no, good.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we did something similar with 30 Seconds to Mars. So while they were checking into different things for the artist, we pointed them to their merch store and had an exclusive sticker that was only available from their merch store. And of the people that clicked through, close to 2% of the people purchased merch. And the average purchase price was $75, which mm-hmm. is another pretty good example. So we're happy with being able to take people that are focused and then try to point them somewhere, so there's a benefit aside from just buzz for the artist as well.
Well, and I think when you talk about transactions too, it kind of brings up a broader opportunity that I think tends to hinder a lot of the growth of things, not only mobily but also digitally, is when you go into something going, I'm doing this to make money, that a lot of times you're not creating the best product because now you're forced with the task of trying to put revenue in front of it without really going, what do the fans want or what does the public want? How can I make this the best thing? Because if you're going to build the right product, the money will come eventually. But I think if you do the reverse model of it, you're setting yourself up for failure in a lot of cases. Even though the fans want to believe that everything is free, I do think you need to build the right, whether it's an app or strategy or whatever it is, and then let the money come in after it. Don't do it the other way around.
For sure, yeah. We definitely started with buzz, and the biggest question I got from a lot of the labels or the managers is, well, how are we going to help make money? Well, it's really hard within social to prove that, you know, certain actions are going to help sell tickets or sell albums. But like I was saying before, as we build on the impact of social, the sales, I think you're going to see things like we're seeing now with television, where for Bravo, social media has a 10% lift in ratings for the shows that they've measured. And I think you have to start with the buzz first, and then the sales will come from that.
Yeah, in our world, we see a lot of people asking, so if I build an app, how much money will I make on it? And I can answer that question a little bit through iTunes, but I can't track how many tickets are selling through the app, just how many people are maybe buying, clicking to buy. I can't track how much merch is sold currently. I don't know what the value is of an email address, but we collect a lot of them. I don't know. No one knows what the value is of a push notification or knowing where someone is. It's what you do with that information. I think it's a long-term play. What's the value of a website? If it's an e-commerce website, it's easy. But if it's a marketing website, it's not as clear. And I think that people need to have a long-term approach with this stuff. It's all brand new, and all the ROI channels are still being flushed out.
Yeah. And one of the things too, exactly to what Michael said, is, you know, when we're looking at our clients, you look at all the additional business and revenue that it comes with it. Because, you know, whether we're Selena Gomez with her 28 million people on Facebook, you come out with a clothing line in the States and, you know, they're a North American company and they don't want to go anywhere else, and you show them what your insights are, and now you're in Brazil and Mexico and going to Germany. And, you know, if you didn't have this information and this army that you amassed online, half the time these other business models and revenue opportunities wouldn't be available. I mean, you look at sponsorship opportunities, they ask you, can we brand your mobile app? Can we send out a tweet? Can we do this on your Facebook page? And you have to remember, it's all these things that you're doing is bringing in revenue.
How do you charge for that? I mean, is there an industry standard currently to say, I'll charge you X to brand an app or to send a push notification?
No, there isn't an industry standard. I think we look at kind of what the overall deal is going to make the client. Because I think if we're talking about, you know, the $5 million deals, if we go and say, give us another, you know, $100,000 and we'll do X, then it doesn't really make sense, because 100,000 versus 5 million, who cares at that point? But if you're down at, you know, the $20,000-$30,000 range and you add another $5,000 to it, it makes a world of a difference for some of these people who, when they're playing a show, aren't even making $5,000 for showing up that night because they're playing clubs.
Yeah, I think that's the most immediate ROI opportunity. If you have to have an ROI positive app on day one, sell it to a brand beforehand. There's a lot of opportunity around there.
We're doing some cool stuff with trying to solve the problems around basically getting groups together, right? So ticketing, we launched something with American Express, which we demoed at the GroupMe Grill all week, which is effectively group-based payments. You could buy something and then pay your friends back through an account that you would sign up for on American Express. The way we visualize that going forward, right, is maybe as you get close to the point of sale, as sort of the social and the commerce layers start to converge, it's that common pain point where you're like online and you're going to buy four tickets and you're worried about whether or not your friends can really go, when they're going to pay you back, if they're not going to pay you back, that kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot of innovation that's happening there. And to be honest, a lot of it will happen on the mobile side. I mean, you know, I can visualize in a year or two from now doing, you know, tons of stuff around in venues and buying tickets right from a mobile roadie app, right? And maybe there's a component of GroupMe inside an app like that that allows you to actually do it with your four people. And maybe there's a component on top of that which allows you to get paid back from your friends directly via the app. So there's probably tons and tons of innovation that's going to happen at that intersection.
Yeah, I'd say the good news is it's digital, so it's all trackable. I mean, I was on a panel a few weeks ago for television, and you're talking Nielsen, where they have 35,000 set-top boxes or whatever the official number is, and all of the advertising for television is based off of those types of ratings. But at least we have something that's digital here, so you can measure click-throughs, you can measure how many people are engaging in certain elements. So I think the future is going to get clearer as we go. I think we're probably just in the first inning, though.
We still have a lot of work to do, though. I mean, again, with Ticketmaster controls, I think 80% of the ticketing in this country for live events, and it is a black hole. Nobody knows conversion numbers, and that the same is true for except for Ticketmaster. Nobody shares conversion numbers. Well, then we should talk after. But the same thing with merch. And I think that you know, having stuff like the GroupMe group experiences, where you can actually track from somebody shared this to Facebook, because of that, a friend downloaded their app and went into the app and then bought $200 worth of XYZ, that's when you start to get really interesting funnels and conversion numbers that we simply don't have right now. We got to solve it.
Then this also, having the data, I think also opens up a whole world of problems, because the people you're normally dealing with, no matter how much you try to explain it to them, don't understand it at all. And I've heard somebody say, oh, your CTR was supposed to be 1%, and you're like, you're kidding me.
Yeah, we have people try to compare push notification opt-ins to email addresses, which it's not comparable. But yeah, the whole understanding of the people making decisions around all this new stuff, it's our responsibility to explain it in plain English and clearly, because it's a whole new world.
the neat thing about what we're talking about, right, is there's so much data out there, and how do you sort of start to structure it and like actually look at that data and make better decisions? So how does the artist decide what they're going to do next in terms of content? I actually, interesting experience on the way to South By, a friend ran into a small British label called XL Recordings and was chatting up on the airplane over, and turned out that this was
not so small.
Yeah, I was going to say they have some pretty
smallish. Sorry, my bad.
They have this little artist called Adele.
Yeah. So my story is, Michael will appreciate this. They were talking about Adele, and Adele, I mean, him go just to karaoke together, you know, just hang out and have a great time and whatever, you know. And so she is always keen on, I was going to tell you this yesterday, but I thought I'd wait for the panel, just for like what's going on in her world. And so they were talking about the activity inside your app, the Adele app. And sort of just what fans were doing at random places, where they were, like what they were saying. Like, she wanted to understand better, like, what was going on in that universe. And it was all through mobile, right? It was that mobile channel. And I think as Adele gets to understand what that is, like, you know, it may impact all of our decisions, including where to tour.
I think this idea of it goes into the bigger idea of sentiment analysis, and how are people, what are they thinking, how are they feeling, and now where are they doing that from? And when you start to piece all those three things together and then have a reaction to it, it gets to be really compelling.
Cool. Also, I just wanted to talk to you guys also about the connections between fans. Like, we hear a lot about social recommendation. Like, my friends are listening to this on Facebook, I'm going to listen to this as well. But it seems like from what you guys are saying, there's a lot of opportunity for connections between people who might not know each other over an artist. Like, what are you guys seeing in terms of the digital mobile world and these fan clubs and Mobile Roadie and the GroupMe chat with Bon Jovi? How are you seeing the fans interacting together?
I think the majority of the fans don't know each other that are using one of our apps, but an interesting trend we've seen is, especially with the big artists, people start saying good morning and good night to each other. And just like America Online back in the 90s, where are you on? You know, are you signed on? We're seeing that all the time. Who's on? Meaning who's currently in the app? And then people start talking. If you look at the map, none of these people are geographically close to each other and I guess wouldn't know each other. But it's all, they have a common interest, which is, in that case, the artist. And that brings them together, and that makes it interesting for them to say good morning and good night to each other. And I hate homework, and my boyfriend broke up with me at school today. I mean, all that's happening around a common thread, which is the artist.
Well, I think by doing all this, I think you're giving them an outlet that they're comfortable being themselves. And I think that, you know, when we launched this whole world around Nicki Minaj, that was one of the biggest things, because a lot of her fans they're all over the place. And, you know, whether they're international or here, what language they speak, you know, do they have friends, real life friends at all, to, you know, they're the most popular person. And how do you create that community, which for her, it was like Team Minaj and creating Barbs. How do you create that community where everybody can come in and be themselves? And, you know, and it goes back to the personalization. We allowed them to pick a name, give their photo, and then just share their experiences. And it really became a close niche family on her website, in her mobile app, and everywhere. And I think, you know, if you go back to what these fans are all there connecting for, you know, they all have that common passion for that artist and this lifestyle. And you need to just give them the ability to express that and really not make them feel like they need to hide behind who other people think they are.
Yeah, what's cool to see on GetGlue, because we're focused, or we have check-in functionality across the spectrum of entertainment, is to see the overlap not just between artists, but between television and movies as well. And we have a proprietary algorithm that gives recommendations based off activity on the service. So we see a lot of overlap and a lot of fans bridging the gap between these different properties or different artists. But similar to what Michael was saying, we have some bases for specific artists that are just ridiculous. I mean, we've done stickers for pretty much everybody, but one of the artists that stands out the most is 30 Seconds to Mars. They're fan base on the service is just rabid. I mean, we have, I think, close to 800,000 check-ins so far for them, and that reach to Facebook and Twitter is close to 180 million. And just to see the convergence that they have, but then also to see what kind of other artists that they like, and to see them making friends on those other pages is really cool to see.
And an interesting thing we see also along those lines is who is more popular per capita. For example, anyone heard of the band Mindless Behavior? They're sort of like the new Backstreet Boys. Interscope artists, they're in the low six figures for app downloads, whereas Adele is over a million. Yet they have four times the amount of comments in their app every day compared to Adele. Is it a bunch of teenage girls and there are some teenage boys? Who's the band? Probably, but it's still a really interesting to sort of benchmark and see per capita which artist has that effect, and then drive that home and change the messaging based on it.
And what potential do you guys see in these fan armies? Like, it's interesting to hear that for us, because one of our categories in the O Music Awards is Fan Army for the Win. And it's staggering to see some of these fan armies for bands like Tokyo Hotel, who maybe in America people might not be as aware of, but they can beat out Lady Gaga and they can beat out Bieber for this award. They won it twice, and they're already asking when the next award show is so that they can start voting. Like, how do we harness the power of these really dedicated, connected fan armies to, you know, to promote the artists, to promote brands, to sell tickets?
I think one of the things is you just can never forget about them. I mean, even somebody on a small front like Hot Chill Ray, who won the Fan Audience Award, I think, at the American Music Awards, and out of everybody they were up against, their numbers paled in comparison. But they've kept them engaged. I mean, you look at Jared, who on Friday for here, I mean, he only has 800,000 people on Twitter, and he was the most retweeted tweet of South By on Friday from the one thing that he sent out when it was raining and we were drenched. And I think, you know, one of the things is it's because you're talking to them and with them, and every step of the way you're supporting them because they're supporting you. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you just on like the pop front, I mean, if you look at Bieber, whenever people are sitting there and, like, you know, whenever there's a negative press or tons of people are tweeting like, "You've forgotten about us," he responds to select tweets to go, "I'm not forgetting about you, I'm just busy."
Does he respond? He responds.
And so I think those are the things, is like, you can't forget about them. I mean, Katy Perry and her Kitty Cats, I mean, she took the form and added it into, I mean, her Katy Cats, she added the form as the official message board in her website, and you just really can't forget about that core fan, because the moment you lose those, they have the effect to make you lose everybody else as well.
Everything that we're building in is a lot of the, therefore, the Vote For Me type campaigns, because Get Glue is structured as sort of a reward for a personal broadcast. We're a great tie-in when artists are attached to something like Dancing with the Stars. So we're going to launch something with Gavin DeGraw, so we can have mobilize his fans to sort of vote for him as part of this campaign. But I think that rewarding the call to action is very important for those core fans, and that's how you build more core fans. The more and the better rewards that you have are how you bridge the gap between the normal fan and the super fan. And I think we're in a constant stage of evolution to figure out what types of rewards can we bring in to build those super fans, because more artists, even smaller ones to big ones, they need fans to step up and take that next big push on their behalf. So we're trying to figure out new ways to whether it's downloads or whatever, but we're seeing that that's actually happening, and fans can, artists can take their normal fans and turn them into crazy fans or diehard fans.
But then even your new fans, like mentioning Gavin, I mean, after Dancing with the Stars, Gavin's going to go on a co-headline tour. So now it's, you know, he's getting all these new fans from the TV show and everything that he's doing, whether it's with Get Glue or any of the other parties. Now, how do you take those people and utilize it? Like, you can't have everybody living in all these different silos just because it's the way that they discovered them. All the people eventually are the same. They're a fan of that talent. And I think, you know, just like with everything digital, everything eventually ends up blending together.
For sure.
Great. I think we have some time for questions now. There's a microphone in the middle, so you guys can just line up, and we have about 15 minutes, so let's go.
I'd like to ask the panel, what do you see as the opportunity for larger brands to work with either emerging artists, up-and-coming artists, maybe some established artists, but more on sort of the rising star side, to build goodwill and engage with their fan base and kind of build that brand connection?
I think there's a lot of connections, and I think, you know, digital is just one part of where that connection can be. You know, whether you're talking about somebody like J Brand Jeans, who in their own right is a great fashion brand for premium denim, but you know, they're going to do music series. And how do you take an up and coming talent, like whether it's somebody like Group Love, who, you know, is growing, but you can easily put jeans on them. You can easily do things that don't hurt their brand. You don't have to look at it as, ah, this has to be a straight up sponsorship. And a lot of times these brands are willing to work with the up and coming people because it's it's inexpensive to work with them than shilling out the millions of dollars to work with the big talent. So you can get 20 grand, 50 grand from these people to create content. And it's content a lot of times too that artists wouldn't be able to create themselves because they don't have the budget for them. So almost approach every possibility as your band or artist is a solution to what that brand's trying to accomplish, and how can what you're going to get out of them really elevate you to that next level instead of it just being a straight up endorsement.
I think this is the number one missed opportunity, at least in my world, in the mobile app space. Brands can sponsor push notifications. They can be all over the app from a graphical point of view. They could have, like Glenn was saying, content that is created specifically. I think that brands get websites and TV and radio, but mobile apps is just this new thing that everyone's still trying to figure out. But I think there's a huge amount of possibility, and because no one knows what to charge yet, apparently, there's a huge amount of flexibility as well for brands to engage.
Do we have any more questions?
So I guess this was probably for Glenn. Of the what you see the community building around, and I notice people come into the application in the case of Mobile Roadie, the difference between where the communities end up getting built out, right? Whether people are more comfortable going to a particular location, like a app sponsored, or doing it on Facebook. I mean, they can find you equally, right, in both places.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where you really realize a lot of times how engaged the fans are and how big of a fan they are, because we always say the more people you get on Facebook, the more people that aren't paying attention to you. Because the people that have been there the longer tend to be really quiet or really passive. And so I think it's just creating the medium creating the touch point on all the different mediums that are really going to utilize the best of what that opportunity has to offer. So, you know, we'll create that community on a website that you get your loyalty points, et cetera. It could tie back into your Mobile Roadie login through your app. Then on Facebook, you know, that's a whole separate ecosystem for a lot of people. And those numbers tend to be a lot bigger than, you know, their web traffic, their app, et cetera. So I think it really comes down to understanding what each medium is and how to utilize it and how to best exploit it for your fans. But you shouldn't ignore one just because you feel like you're getting more fans on a different site.
Yeah, I have a question about iPad, you know, or tablets, and what you think of the possibilities for, you know, some mobile, and has been fantastic to engage and connect with the audience. But, you know, what are the opportunities to, you know, potentially repackage content like albums as an iPad application? And, you know, fans seem to be willing to spend more money on the iPad than on a mobile phone. And if any of you guys had like an observation on
yeah, I mean, I think there's one area that definitely becomes of interest for a lot of people are the legacy acts that have a huge catalog, because a lot of times that catalog's just sitting there and they have 20, 30 years worth of content that, you know, now they might own or could have access to the rights to it, and being able to revitalize a lot of their careers through these experiences. Because it's funny when you see like somebody like Kiss, whose, you know, fan base is now that business audience that has the iPad. And so you can totally get them to spend a ton of money. But then at the same time, we're all trying to break the rules, I guess, in one way, and make that app albums or whatever it is, but then trying to get Billboard to actually scan it's a whole nother issue. But that's what I think is awesome, though, because you'll get artists nowadays too who will be like, I don't care about that scan. I want the most amount of fans. And so I think it's interesting.
So eBay's average transaction on their mobile app is $45, and their average transaction on their iPad app is $65, and that's for two reasons. One, it's a different demographic. iPad's expensive. It's optional, whereas you probably do need a mobile phone. But secondly, the iPad presents an opportunity to just have a much more immersive experience. Everything's bigger. Everything's richer. Everything's feels better and is therefore a bit easier to engage and transact and buy. So I see eBay is an exception. They're doing exceptionally well in the mobile space, but I think that Those kind of statistics and the increased commerce on iPad is a huge potential for the future for everybody.
iPad's going to be enormous. I mean, there was more iPads sold, I think, in Q4 than any PC maker sold PCs. It's just absolutely crazy. So all this commerce that people are doing on their phones now, and one good example is a New York-based company called Fab.com. Mm-hmm. 20% of their users have their mobile app. Most of them go to Fab.com's website. But those 20% of the users that have that app are actually spending 40% of the buying 40% of goods on Fab. So in theory, you know, the iPad would even be a better application to go through their catalog and buy stuff.
And I think bigger picture, what's happening is we're no longer, it's getting rarer and rarer to say, oh, I want to go buy something or I want to go do something. I'll wait till I get home, till I'm at my computer. That's going away. And so we're able to do pretty much anything we need at this point on our mobile phone or on our iPad. And that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Do we have any more? Oh, we have one in the back. There we go.
I was just curious what you think about the new Google Plus possibilities for bands, streaming rehearsals and possibly charging for them and things like that. And yeah, that's basically it.
Well, I think the hardest part right now with Google Plus is retention. I think it's like, you know, if you look at some of the companies like Tencent in China or like all these companies that kind of all fall into the same realm where everybody has an account, but how many people are actually logging in and utilizing the profile and the capabilities of it, especially when you're in a closed network where people aren't necessarily always coming back. I think you always got to look at how many people can access it and what is that barrier to entry, because when you're paying for something, do you have to now enter it into like Google Wallet or whatever it's doing? Or can you just text in your payment so that you don't have to get out your credit card and you're done right there? I think Google Plus, just like all networks or platforms, has its own challenges. But you know, if you get in and you do it right, there's people who are doing it right. But if you're going to sit there and focus on one, I think make sure you're focusing on the right one.
How many people are on Google Plus in this room?
Thank you.
And how many people have logged in the last 2 weeks to your account?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yep.
Google Plus.
No retention.
I'm with a large brand that wants to insert ourselves into the conversation. How do your apps do that for us?
Which brand are you with?
We're in the credit industry. We have a band. You figure it out.
Well, I think there's different ways in the conversation. I think it's less about becoming a straight up ad and more about the conversation from the talent to, you know, I remember working with like KISS with Bud Light Golden Wheat, and we never once wanted to say like go drink Bud Light Golden Wheat, but it was like, all right, we're getting ready backstage and they don't drink. So it was like getting ready for like drinking this. What are you drinking? Like, you don't have to straight up say I'm doing this. And then there's a lot of interactivity moments. Like when we did the Katie to tweet, there's easy ways that you could have looped in. Like if we had Snapple, let's per se, a Snapple fact into the Twitter feed. And it didn't have to be from the artist or anything like that. And I think it has to come across as organic. Because they're not going to engage. And the worst thing that you can do, I think, as a brand by forcing it in with an artist is to actually hurt the artist's own brand so that you lose their fans, even no matter how big the paycheck is. Because I think that's something we definitely look at, is what's going to be the impact on their own footprint.
One really basic, simple thing we've seen is we have this feature called Photo Cards where you can, our client can upload artwork and then it's overlaid on top of the camera and someone can snap a picture. That's a great opportunity for a brand where people are snapping pictures at a show or just out with their friends, and it's brought to you by Verizon, by Chase, by whatever.
Yeah, for us, it definitely has to be relevant, and it has to tie in for that conversation for it to make sense. So we're still growing, but we're still pretty picky about how the brands are integrated, because obviously there is a lot of there's a lot of hurdles, you know, as things that, like Glenn was saying. So if it doesn't make sense, and it's not, I mean, first and foremost, let me take a step back. We look at the user conversation, and if it's positive for the user conversation, then it's something that we'll go with.
I just wanted to insert, I think it's a really interesting example when OKGo worked with State Farm last year. I think facilitating a band to do something they wouldn't otherwise be able to do financially is a great way, because OKGo left EMI partially because they were upset that their videos were no longer embeddable, and that was kind of their thing. So State Farm funded their Rube Goldberg machine video, which became a huge viral hit last year. And it wasn't like, oh, you know, OKGo shilling for State Farm. And if you guys saw the commercial during the Super Bowl with, I can't remember the car company at, off the top of my head, but where they did this, Kia? Oh, okay. Motley Crue?
Yeah.
No, it was OKGo had a car commercial as well where they had... they were driving down the street, and they were playing all these different instruments with sticks outside the car window. So I think, yeah, if you're facilitating a band to do something they wouldn't otherwise be able to do because bands are not rich, I'm sure as you can tell us, that's an interesting way to unobtrusively enter into the conversation. I think we have time for one or two more questions.
I was wondering if you could kind of share some tips with us about, you know, just for people that are promoting their apps, you know, how to, like, increase installs, any simple, you know, things that are easily actionable.
I was like, it's interesting because I was like, the Katie one was, I mean, and I hate going back to the same person, but the one that really got a lot of installs going on hers, aside from her brand being that it was so big at the time, was the fact that we had the concert experience locked into it, that we were driving people every night from, I think when we launched, her Facebook was only at like 18 or 19 million at the time, so it was like a third of what it is now. We basically were geo-targeting posts on Facebook just saying, going to the show at Madison Square Garden, download the app and check in to be able to like to meet Katie, etc. And so you're using all of your channels to be able to get people to go do it, because that you're not spamming everyone. And then when they got into the app, you have to create the opportunities to keep them there, which was the check-in and the rewards and seeing the photos. At the other spectrum of that, creating apps from I think the get-go as, you know, something that can help them with productivity or really find that niche with the fan base. Like on Nicki Minaj, it was, you know, all her tour dates and everything's in there, but it was built around a Nictionary, which was her own language. And what's an interactive way to create that? Because fans wanted, and from listening to fans, back to what Matt had said and Michael had said, is, you know, what do fans want and where is that hole? And people had no idea half the time what she was saying. And so they were trying to create their own dictionary. So we were like, let's go out and create the official one ourselves.
Another thing that you guys sort of astutely did was you embedded our JavaScript, which redirects, if you're on an iPhone or Android, people to download the app. 20% maybe on average of traffic today to any given website is coming from an iPhone or Android device, and so that's a way to capture it and to funnel it into a channel that you have more control over and you can push messaging through easier.
And I think the other thing, too, is what's the goal? Like, are you looking to push an artist app that, you know, has all the core functionalities? Or the other path of this whole conversation too is creating like unique IP and new IP for these apps, so that, you know, you take somebody like Kesha, and instead of coming out with a Kesha app, you are now creating her whole world. And that's something that we're in the process of. And, you know, it's almost like she presents an app, but it's not her, and you take a bigger business stroke than your own personal brand. But that's always, I think, really tricky too, because you have to make sure it's something that's going to connect with the general population when you're already so niche in your own right.
Great. I think we have time for one more, if anyone has a final question. Nope.
Oh. So you talked about the OKGo example of their kind of viral video type stuff. How much, I guess, is a company, if you're going to sponsor something like that, I think there's kind of a tension between how much you're spending marketing dollars, and there's a tension between the control of your brand and your message, what you're trying to do, versus what you're trying to tap into with the artist and their creativity and kind of getting to their fan base. So like that example of them in the car playing stuff, I assume the car company said, yeah, you got to use our car. And then is it kind of up to them to creatively find out what they would do with that? Because you're kind of giving them an opportunity, something that they might not normally be able to do. I guess just, is there a lot of different variability between that of kind of how much control the marketing side has it versus the artist's creativity and what they actually want to do? Like the idea of going down, driving, playing in the car, was that something that came from them, or was that something that was kind of pitched to them as an idea from the marketing side.
I'm not really sure. I think Glenn can speak better to that.
Yeah, I don't know their details in particular, but I think every opportunity is unique. And I think that's what makes mm-hmm. this world very interesting and also very difficult to navigate. Because you'll have brands come out that literally just want to sponsor a YouTube channel. You'll have brands that come out and just want product placement. And I think it is just going back and sussing out what's the best opportunity. And, you know, and at the end of the day, the talent, though they want some money, they're not going to hurt their brand, but they also don't want to get involved in something that's going to hurt your brand, because no one wants that negative press. So I think having that dialogue and being able to go into a situation with a dialogue definitely makes it a lot easier to have a conversation.